From the Land Grant University at Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 8th day of March 2017. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vakes. She's at Stuart Peterson from right here in Champaign County. A bit later in the program, the folks at the Anderson's Climbers facility out of Logansport, Indiana, where they make ethanol from corn, will join us to take a look at the cash grain situation. And we'll catch up with farm broadcaster Ron Hayes. He'll tell us all about those wildfires in the ranges of Oklahoma, parts of Kansas, and the Texas Panhandle right here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Of course, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Wednesday afternoon. I am so happy to have Jackie Vakes back on the radio with us today from Stuart Peterson. Jackie, thanks for being here. It's great to hear your voice again.
Well, I tell you what, Todd, it's so great to be back. Even though the only thing the doctor cleared me to do was come back and do the radio, he won't let me go back to work just yet. But this is a start, and it's been a long haul. But one of the things that really kept me going was knowing I was going to be able to come back and do the show and be able to still talk with all our listeners.
Yeah, we probably should tell folks the problem that you've had is actually that you were a car accident, and then there were some complications after the fact, and so you're just still on the mend. So we're expecting a full recovery and getting back to work and all kinds of things in the future, right?
You betcha. You know, that's one thing I want to warn everybody about. We were in a car accident where we were hit from behind. No broken bones, no blood, no anything, and thought we came out of it okay, just maybe some muscle problems. And I just continued to have pain all the time, and they couldn't figure out what it was. And I guess the down and dirty is, whatever you do, if you get hit from behind, don't settle a case before 8 months, because at the eight-month line, I really turned south and ended up with a giant peptic ulcer and lost half my stomach and had all kinds of other gigantic problems that went along with it. And so I guess it goes to show that no matter what, just because you are not bleeding and you're not broken doesn't mean you can't be hurt really seriously. I would have never guessed that it could have ever been anything like this. But I'm glad that's in the past.
Me too. We did a lot of praying for you over the time.
Appreciate it.
Thanks for being back. So let's start. You want to start with the USDA report? That's tomorrow at 11 a.m.
Right. I think that, you know, there's definitely something that we farmers need to think about, okay? You know, when you look at the guesses, you know, they're looking at 2.32 basically for corn, which is the same as it was in February. But last year at this time, we were at 1.74. Beans, 418. Little bit less than 420 from last year, but last year at this time we were at 197, and wheat 1.35 versus a 1.139 last month, but last year we were at 976. Now, you know, what I'm saying is, you know, we've been experiencing great exports, we've been experiencing higher prices, but this is not a great situation, and it's certainly something we have to be aware of. Now, if you look at the world numbers, they're expecting 218.5 versus 217.6 last month. Last year it was 210.4. There's a little bit of a pattern here. Beans 81.5 versus 80.4. Last year 77.2. And wheat 248.6 versus 248.6. Wheat doesn't change very often, but last year it was 244.77. That concerns me. Because you have to wonder why we've managed to get a crop insurance number on corn at 396, you know, 10 cents higher than last year. But the bean number, 1019 versus 885 last year, these numbers, I think, are, you know, prices that probably can lull us into thinking that it's not going to ever change. You know, heck, we got higher carryouts and we're still getting these great numbers. I just think that you have to really be very cautious in your thinking and know exactly where you're at.
And you have some reasons for the better numbers at this point, and then some cautionary tales too?
Well, I do, Todd. I mean, when you look at our export numbers, I still am a believer that they're front-loading a lot of exports, and they're doing that primarily because of fear out of the U.S. dollar going higher. And possibly fear for other reasons, too. You know, we have a new president, we have new policies, we have a lot of things going on. But bigger than that and more important than that is, you know, the U.S. dollar is higher, but so is the Brazilian real. When they decided to oust Dilma Rousseff down there last year and impeach her, what it did was it took that currency and just strengthened it. And so the Brazilian farmer is a really slow seller this year. He's only sold 45%. And he had 54% sold last year. On average, he's got at least 50% sold. And, you know, true to form, they built more on-farm storage. And why are they doing that? Well, they're hoping, you know, that something's going to happen. And you have to understand, you know, when you're in South America, you get paid in U.S. dollars for your crop. So, you know, they're saying that they need 10.25 to 10.90 to become aggressive sellers. And I don't want any of our listeners to be jumping up and down all excited because of this, because you have to be very cautious. The board does not need to be at those prices at all. All the U.S. dollar needs to do is strengthen more against the real, and that means they get more for their beans, or the real needs to weaken against the dollar, which is what it's been doing, and that gives them more for their beans. So don't get too wrapped up in where we're at right now. Be very cautious, because this can change quickly. Just think of what it's like here in the U.S. when we get good prices and suddenly we start to dump. What does it do to the board? It's not going to be any different when the Brazilian farmer starts to have to really sell and get himself into a position where, you know, where he can handle it. And so, you know, I just want everybody to be cautious.
Hey, did you get a look at the Informa numbers?
I did. When you looked at their world corn crop numbers, they were up 2.5 million metric tons production-wise, you know, versus, and it's primarily coming out of Brazil because they're expecting Brazil to be at 91 versus 66.5 last year. On beans, they were up 2 million metric tons, again, coming out of Brazil. They're looking at 108 versus 95.4 last year. They're looking at wheat being up 4.1 million metric tons, primarily coming out of India and Argentina. So, you know, when you look at the, yeah, I don't agree with Informa real often, Todd, okay? But in this particular situation, I guess I have to kind of agree with them, because I think that what we're seeing in Brazil and even Argentina is a reaction to the idea that the change at the presidential level in our country is going to cause them to be able to perhaps capture more of our export market. And so that, you know, they're reacting by adding more acres, figuring they're going to be able to do this. Now, I don't know how wise that is for them, because, you know, they again are, you know, they had a record crop last year. They're looking at possibly a record crop again this year. You know, they're 45% harvested right now versus 41% last year and only 38% on average. So their yields are really good. You know, I just am not sure it's the smartest thing to do, but that isn't always what happens. You know, I mean, they look at it and they think this is what's going to go. And then, you know, you look here in the U.S. and we look at the, you know, the ag outlook. I really miss not being able to go to that. But, you know, they said corn acres are going to be up 4 million this year, or down 4 million, excuse me, and bean acres up 4.6 million. You know, it's a situation where, really? Do we really believe that? I don't necessarily buy into that, I guess. I think weather's still going to have much more to do with it when you look at, you know, like if we have an early spring, I think we'll see more corn acres. If we have a normal spring, more bean acres, maybe. You know, a lot of people are counting on all those wheat acres to go to beans. I just don't know. You know, to me, the question is, will our farmers change their 50-50 rotation? There's going to be some more acres. There's no question about that. But you also have to remember, you know, the outlook for them was 3 million acres short, like always. You know, they leave a little swishy room in there for total acres for the U.S., and so you never know what else it might go into.
Hey, Jackie, thanks so much. Home run, baby. We'll talk
Thank
with you,
you
again next week, okay?
All right, bye-bye now.
You betcha. Talk to you then. Bye.
Jackie Vakes is with Stuart Peterson. We're now joined by Ron Hayes. He's a farm broadcaster in Oklahoma City on the Radio Oklahoma Network and has been watching up close there the devastating wildfires that has been happening in Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, Colorado, and the property damage, the folks that have been really hurt by these. Ron, thanks so much for being with us today. What's the situation on the ground this afternoon in Oklahoma?
Well, we're under another red flag warning across a lot of Kansas, a good bit of Oklahoma, and even in the Texas Panhandle, where winds are expected to be, and they're already starting to pick up quite a bit from primarily the south today. Humidities are really low. They've been low for several days now, all this week, in fact. And that combination, plus a lot of dead vegetation at this time of year before things start to green up, that adds up to a real problem.
Ron, we've been watching the dry conditions develop from Texas all the way through Missouri. I assume this is part of the tinderbox that created the problem?
It is, sure, it surely is. And you know what we're talking about is this is very much southern high plains country, very few trees as you get west of Interstate 35, which is the highway that really runs from Kansas City to Wichita and Oklahoma City down to Dallas. When you go west of there, it really gets flatter, and there's canyons and just not a lot of forage beyond, you know, the grasses and a good bit of CRP land. And that was one thing that was remarked to me by a couple of folks is that some of that CRP land had a lot of extra dry forage on it, and that just added the fuel to the fire.
Yeah, so this is what we would call in our part of the state a prairie fire, usually tried to be a controlled burn. Mm-hmm. Uncontrolled there. Grasslands, they sweep very quickly. Property, animals, both in the way, and I think that it's been pretty devastating.
It has been, and you know, one of the concerns we've got right now is that we're looking at calving season. We're right now in the middle of spring calving season, and that means that we've got a lot of calves on the ground. Those calves, a lot of them have not made it through the fire, and even you know, some of the animals that are not in the immediate path of the fire, so much smoke in the area that I know there's a lot of ranchers very concerned about, you know, smoke inhalation and the damage to the lungs that'll be a permanent part of their lot.
I listened to your interview with Tom Fanning from the Oklahoma mm-hmm. Cattlemen's Association, a cattleman himself, of course, and talking about the cooperative effort between the extension offices, the veterinarians, mm-hmm. and the pharmaceutical companies that serve beef cattle producers out there, trying to get to them antibiotics and other kinds of medicines that can help these animals.
Yeah, that's one of the things that good part of what's happening is that a lot of folks will pull together and trying to you know come up with some solutions where you've got you know lung damage. In a lot of cases that can turn into pneumonia, and so you know you've got some antibiotics available to you that can help the situation. That's a bonus for the cattle producer. You know, there's a lot of concerns. There's been animals that have been harmed that, you know, that have got fire burns. And as a result, some of those animals are having to be, basically put down. And that's, you know, that works on you, the psyche of these ranchers as well as they deal with these animals that are hurt.
How many animals do we think have been impacted?
Boy, that's a tough question right now because they're still kind of assessing. You know, I saw one Kansas rancher that was talked to by a member of the media that indicated that he lost probably 85% of his herd. He had several hundred cows. You know, that may be the extreme, but the problem with this particular fire, very unusual because a lot of times ranchers are able to get in front of these things, and if they know that their ranch is in the line of a fire, they're able to get out and maybe cut some fences and give a way of escape for these animals and then round them up later. This fire went so fast. It went from like 0 to 60. You know, there were thousands of acres encompassed in almost immediately. And a lot of the times the ranchers were not able to get any sort of an exit strategy for their animals. They got trapped.
And Monday night we had 40-mile-an-hour sustained winds here. Mm-hmm. It's the wind that really creates the problem.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you got the combination of the wind, the low humidity, the dry vegetation. It just adds up to a huge problem. And one spark turns into one of these fires that, you know, 200,000, 300,000 acres happens. You know, one fire, there's one little area that kind of the northeast corner of the Texas Panhandle goes up into Oklahoma and then into southern Kansas. All of that area alone, about 1 million acres or more actually burning.
How can we help?
At this point, probably two things. I mean, if some folks do have some hay, that's immediate concern. And there are folks that are actually working with that. You mentioned the fact that the Oklahoma State University Cooperative Extension is a part of that help. The cattlemen organizations, Oklahoma Cattlemen, Kansas Livestock Association, are active in helping as well with in-kind type donations of hay or even fencing materials. There's two foundations, the Kansas Livestock Foundation and the Oklahoma Cattlemen's Foundation. They're both accepting donations, cash that would, they're nonprofit status. They'll be accepting donations and then giving grants to producers to help rebuild fence, help with the medical cost of animals that either they're having to put down or if they're, they're trying to get them back to health and repair. Wounds that are, coming from the burns, this type of thing.
This is a devastation to the area you're in. I know that the extension offices are working there to coordinate hay delivery, and if folks want to get hold of Oklahoma Extension, they should be able to do that easily enough where they can just call me here, and I'll figure out for you where to put those. The industry folks have donated all kinds of materials as well, and if people want to just simply donate, they can go to the Oklahoma Cattlemen's Association, and there's a place to do that. Ron,
yes, sir.
Thank you so much for being with us, for doing the job out there, and take care of your ranchers.
All right. Thank you.
Ron Hayes is a really good farm broadcaster from Oklahoma City at the Radio Oklahoma Network. Let's turn our attention to the cash grains segment of the marketplace. Now back here in the Midwest, we'll talk with the folks over at the Climbers facility that belongs to the Andersons. They make ethanol there. On the line is Stephen Linneber. Thanks so much, Stephen, for being with us. Tell me about basis in your area.
Firmed a little stronger with the decline in the market the last couple days. Basis really reluctant to let go, even through the rally of last week and the week before, has been pretty firm, and now we watch the future side of the market really start to drift away here. Basis is going to have to firm to keep bushels moving. I mean, the processor in search for corn to meet demand for March, April, May, and as we watch this thing to continue to decline, cash sales king, and basis has got to kind of offset a little bit of this futures loss.
So you're looking forward, thinking farmers are going to go to the field, maybe fearful that they'll go early, and basis is firmed up by how much?
About a nickel.
Oh, that's actually really good. Where are your bids for the day? Are you?
We sit right now three over posted. I think there's a word in the countryside. I think guys a little stronger than that to get volume on an offer, but based off a posted bid, it'd reflect about a 3 cent increase here from earlier in the week as well into last week.
And how large of a drag area do you need at this point compared to normal? If you're three over, you were still a little short, I think, to the northeast of you, but have you had to push that just so you could expand area?
Lately, no, because of the help on the future side of the market. We watched movement, cash receipts for two straight weeks that helped offset a little of that two-buy number per day. But here the last couple days, every day that goes by that we watch that cash receipts number be relatively low, our next day's two-by number grows a little. So there's still a pretty good chunk there that I think, always interested to find out where the farmer wants to be on value and always would entertain offers. But at this point, the search is on for a pretty good chunk to feel good, especially in that April, May time slot where we know movement will be minimal.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Wednesday afternoon. Drew Lerner is here from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Drew, earlier in the program, we heard from farm broadcaster Ron Hayes in Oklahoma about the devastating wildfires in the rangelands there that the ranchers have been battling. CRP acres have been a particular problem. High winds are the biggest issue there. It makes the speed of these fires hard hard to contain and control. Do they have high winds again this afternoon?
The wind speeds are not nearly what they were earlier this week. I'm going to say no, but you know, when you've got a fire and it's not controlled, any wind is bad. And these winds this afternoon will be maybe sustained to 15 to 20 miles per hour. That's still too high if you're trying to put a fire out. But a far cry from the 40 and 50 mile an hour winds that occurred earlier this week that really caused the problem to get out of control.
Let's talk about some other changes that are happening in the United States. We've had a pretty warm winter, although it looks like we're going to get maybe some snow in parts of the U.S.
Yeah, you know, it's a little bit of payback time. You know, anytime we go through a prolonged period of warm or cold or whatever extreme weather, we always go back the other way eventually. Nature just wants to keep herself a little bit better balanced. And we had this incredible cold air mass up in northwest Canada at the beginning of this week and late last week, where temperatures were as cold as minus 54, I believe, is what I saw. And that's what slid down across the Canadian prairies in the earlier part of this week, causing the big blizzard in Manitoba, and actually responsible for those high winds we just talked about from Saskatchewan, Canada, all the way down to Texas. The wind associated with that blizzard in Manitoba has since subsided quite a bit, but we're now going to see the cold air in Canada work its way through the eastern United States. There will be two surges of snow that will come through the Midwest. We may have snow on the ground in more of the Midwest by the time we get to the first part of next week than we've seen in weeks. And the snow is not, it's going to be a wet snow, but it will interrupt some travel. It will put some moisture down for some of those drier areas in Missouri and Illinois, and help to bolster some of the water supply situation in the lower Midwest. But it will also be followed by bitter cold air that will bring freezes into the interior parts of the southeastern United States. And that will likely lead to damage to the fruit trees, which are all flowering now way ahead of time, ahead of their normal period. And we're probably going to have a little bit of a shortage of fresh fruit in some of those areas because of the freezes that are coming up over the weekend.
It will be a sad summer for many of us in that case. Turn your attention southward. The BR163 has been a problem in South America. That goes north. For the most part, it runs both ways, of course, but we've been talking about truck traffic running north. However, there's a rain and flooding potential in other parts of that country.
That's right. Most of the problems on BR-163 has already been fixed to a certain degree. They still have a lot of work to be done, but the big backup on the road is not what it was earlier on. But now we're going to bring two waves of significant rains into Rio Grande do Sul, and this will occur starting here tomorrow and continuing into Monday. And between the two events, we'll probably see 3.5 to 7 inches of rain generally, and it wouldn't surprise me to see some local totals coming up close to 8 or 9 inches. This is going to cause some problems for crops, obviously. Low-lying areas will certainly see some significant flooding. The crop that's most vulnerable right now is actually the rice crop. It is ready to be harvested. In fact, some harvesting is underway. This will just destroy the quality of that crop to a large degree and cause some of the ripe crop to be dropped into the water on the ground, and it will not be harvestable. About 20% of Brazil's rice comes from this particular area. Now, corn and soybeans will be beat up a bit from the storms as well, but I'm not expecting to see large amounts of damage, but certainly drier weather will absolutely have to occur after this.
Thanks so much for taking the time with us today, Drew.
You bet. Have a great day.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason.